listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Are you ever?
You are. And they said you were a fool to dream, but you are listening. Yes.
How are you?
I am good, Michael. How are you?
I'm excited. We've got two fabulous people in the studio today.
And a fabulous person on the phone. All sorts of three different types of fabulous today. Yes,
exactly. And then there's you, and then there's me. And that's more fabulous.
Yes, it is. Absolutely fabulous, one might say.
You were afraid of what I was going to say.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Two guests in studio today and yet a third on the phone, as we mentioned earlier. He'll join us in just a few moments. But first, we're going to meet a woman who I believe has worked with more legendary leading men than you can shake an Emmy Award at. You see the way I work that in? You see how
Very smooth.
I tell you. From Clint Eastwood to Robert Redford to Burt Lancaster to Gene Hackman, a legendary actress we are delighted to have with us on State of the Arts, Susan Clark is with us. Susan, delighted to have you.
Thank you. Oh, that's lovely. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. And, ladies and gentlemen, a gentleman who began his career at 12 years old, starring in national commercials, and subsequently his career led him to Broadway, where, still just a teenager at the time, he made his Broadway debut in A Chorus Line. He has appeared in numerous shows and has played the title roles in both Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat and The Who's Tommy on Broadway.
If only he could have done some good musicals.
I know.
Well, you got to start somewhere, yeah. I would imagine.
These people, you know. but today, we will find out how you can see him live right here in Los Angeles. The wonderfully talented Matt Zarley is in the house.
Yes, sir.
Hello.
Matt. Glad to have you as well.
Matt.
Little Matt.
I sounded like Ted Knight just then.
Hello.
And in a few minutes, we'll click on the electric telephone and chat with a man who is a New Orleans legend. He'll be calling us from his home in that great city. This week's mystery guest will join us in just a few minutes. But first, Michael, before we chat with our mystery guest, how was your week?
Well, it's good. And it's been very super busy, but I look forward to the weekend, Paul, because we've got two great shows in town playing. Speaking of A Chorus Line, that being one of them. We had last week, ladies and gentlemen, Vinnie Carranza and Chrissy Whitehead from the company of A Chorus Line at Musical Theater West in Long Beach, and it's a splendid show that's doing just gangbuster business down there.
They were lovely people, too.
Yes, they were. And they've got six shows left this weekend. They had one at 10 o'clock this morning. Can you imagine? They bring all the high schools in to the Carpenter Center down in Long Beach there and do a performance for them to keep the arts alive with these young people in high school. Very smart idea and very important idea. And then they have a show tonight, and they have one tomorrow night, two on Saturday, and two on Sunday.
I wanted to tell you, too, before you continue, I was in Long Beach and had dinner with my friends David and Hyra George and their girls, Sienna and Indigo. They're friends of mine for years and years and years. And totally unsolicited, they went to see the show, and they could not give it higher praise. They absolutely
fantastic.
Loved it. Yeah, they really
did.
So
there you go. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's your cue. You have a weekend left of six shows to see A Chorus Line, Musical Theater West in Long Beach at the Karen and Richard Carpenter Center. They're performing arts at a beautiful center there. And simply go to musical.org to purchase your tickets, or by phone, 562-856-9999, extension 4.
Still can't believe they got that URL. Musical.org. What did they pay for that?
I don't know, big bucks. Right. And then conversely, opening in Los Angeles at the beautiful Colony Theater in Burbank, Falling in Love with Love. And this is a very interesting salute to the music of Lorenz Hart and Richard Rodgers. And I think there's a book to this, too.
And there's a family tie, too. I think there's a family tie to it. I think someone who's working on it is in
our
family. I believe so. I'm not sure. But
you know,
we're hoping to have Barbara Beckley on to talk about it. So.
Yes, I hope we will in the very, very near future. Barbara, if you're listening. And Mark Schultzman.
She's right here, actually. Ladies and gentlemen, Barbara Beckley. I'm kidding.
Mark Schultzman, who was the author of The True Story of the Colony Gallagher Brothers, Who Never Threw Anything Out, that's the title. He is working on this as for the book, for the theater, and it is featuring all of those great, wonderful songs that were written by Rodgers and Hart, My Funny Valentine, Blue Moon, Manhattan, Falling in Love with Love, Bewitched, Bothered and Bewildered, Where Are Win.
Wow.
What do you think of that score?
Fabulous.
Yeah, Matt, you know that.
Yes.
So that is at the Colony Theater, ladies and gentlemen. You have a chance to see the opening of that, and that is this Saturday evening. Call for tickets, 818-558-7000, and you will have beautiful seats in another one of our gorgeous mid-sized houses.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah.
So how was your
week? My week was good, but I actually, I'm going to tell you about my week next week, because
okay.
I want to jump right into our first guest, since we have three guests
so
today.
Patient. Thank you.
And one of the things I like about doing this weekly show, Michael, and I'm sure you agree with me on this, that reaches so many people, is that when I come across an artist that is heroically talented, we can let hundreds of thousands of people know about it right off. Now, Monica got me two CDs by our first guest this past Christmas at the suggestion of our friend Morgan Lyons, who recently moved to New Orleans. And I've listened to little else since. Our first guest is now widely recognized as the embodiment of the downtown New Orleans lifestyle. Sketchy bars, cracked sidewalks, fallen down houses, tattered hearts, injured spirits, and discarded chicken bones. He's often compared to Tom Waits. They both have whiskey-throated voices and share an obsession with the Ninth Ward, except our first guest actually lives there. Please welcome a true troubadour and a brilliant musician, really a great, great guy. His name is Alex McMurray. Alex, are you there?
I'm right here.
Hey, how are you? It's great to have you on.
It's great to be here. I hear you. You just called me heroically talented.
Yes, I did.
You know, unless I got some wax in my ears.
I'm
going to put that on my tombstone.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you, Alex. Are you on a speaker, or how are you working?
I've got this microphone I'm trying to use.
Oh, yeah, that's a little better.
You know what? I got the wrong headphones on, man.
Oh, okay.
See, that might be.
Hold on.
Because I know you're in New Orleans, but I didn't expect you to be underwater, and that's what it sounds like.
No, we're there.
You there? Okay, I think we're listening to headset displacement. We'll give him a minute, and we'll see if he pops back, and hopefully we will continue very, very shortly.
Can you hear me now?
There you are.
Here we go.
Oh, that works much better.
Working?
Alex, thank you so much for taking time from your crazy busy schedule. I know you're just back from France. Is that correct?
Yeah. We were in France for about 3 weeks.
Wow.
Which was great. I mean, the food was terrible, but the people were so warm.
Well, I tell you, coming from New Orleans, you got a tough act to follow in terms of food. Alex, one of the things I want to ask you, and probably one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, is there's this wonderful theatricality about your work. You're very similar in style, and I mean this in only the best way, in terms of the characters that inhabit your songs. Much like Randy Newman, you sort of create this character, this disagreeable character, sometimes disagreeable, sometimes sad, sometimes happy, and then you sing from the point of view of that character. Is that something that's always been a part of your work, or like from when you started out, or is that something that you've sort of grown into?
That was something that was going on before I even knew who Randy Newman was.
Yeah.
In fact, I was like, I guess I was like, got signed to a record deal, and they were writing all these reviews about my stuff, and they're like, "Oh, it's Randy Newman Askew, Randy Newman this, that."
Yeah.
And then finally, I was like, I thought he was just like the guy from Short
People. Yeah.
And so finally, my friend Davis Rogan said, and in fact, that's what he said. He said, "Dude, you need to listen to this guy." So he made me a tape. This is back in the 90s when people made tapes for each other.
Right, way back when.
And I had a tape in a borrowed car that I was borrowing one summer. And I listened to pretty much 12 songs and Rednecks for about 2 months straight. And I was like, okay. And so, that's something that if you're going to write songs, you have to write it from a point of view.
Right.
Want to write it from a point of view that is unpopular, I think it's handy to have somebody to pin it on.
Yeah.
It isn't you.
Yeah, that's very true. Alex, are you a follower of Loudon Wainwright III?
A little bit.
Because he's another person that I dig a great deal, and he also has that sort of...
He's got some ugly people in his thing. All the Wainwrights.
Yeah.
Have a little bit of ugliness about them.
Yeah, there's sort of a dark theme running through that whole family, but we are all beneficiaries of that because the music is all the better for it. The two albums of yours that I was talking about earlier, Alex, are How to Be a Cannonball and I'll Never Be Alone in This Land. And I wanted to make sure that we got your website out there so people can find... I'm sure they're in all the usual venues, the CD Now, Amazon.
I'm easy to find. AlexMcMurray.com,
AlexMcMurray.com.
My name, you got my website.
Yeah, AlexMcMurray.com. I'm going to play a little bit of this is a track off of You'll Never Be Alone in This Land, and we're just going to listen to a little bit of this right now. This is Alex McMurray with The Get-Go.
Killer.
A flunky from St. John's Spit. He told himself that he was through with it. So tired of drifting and bumming around, he thought he'd take her to another town. She was a chippy from Chicago, the only place she'd ever seen before. She does a drinking from a gerbil jar. She keeps beneath the seat of the car. She liked to hit it from the get-go. She liked to hit it from the get-go.
Alex, I got to tell you, if nothing else, I'm grateful to you for resurrecting the use of the word chippy. Because there's a word I just don't think is used often enough.
It's funny about that chippy thing. I get a lot of comments about that chippy.
Do you?
I do. You're not the first person. I got a friend down here who uses that word. And I hang out with him, and it's like, it's not like some antiquated verbiage, man. It's part of the lexicon.
No, I say that because I know a great deal of chippies. That's why I thought it was so good to hear. Alex, you got a gig coming up here in Los Angeles, not for a little while. It's in September, right? It's September 21st, is that correct?
I think it's September 14th.
September 14th, but it's the Mint over on Pico, right?
Yeah. Well, I wish it wasn't so long, because I'd love to come to Los Angeles.
Me too. I wish it wasn't so long, but I want to ask you right now on the air so you can hold me to it that when you do come to town, we can have you in studio and chat with you some more about your local appearance. Would you be able to do that?
Absolutely, 100%, I promise you.
Great, man. Alex, thank you so much. We got three guests today, so I don't mean to give you the bum's rush, but we did want to chat with you, and the website is alexmcmurray.com. The albums are How to Be a Cannonball and You'll Never Be Alone in This Land. Buy them immediately. You will not be disappointed. He's got other things and works as a frontman or with a whole bunch of other bands. Alex, can't thank you enough for coming on and joining us. We're very grateful.
Thank you, sir.
I was thrilled to be here. Have a great day.
Thanks, Alex. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Great guy.
Yeah.
Great albums.
Nice music.
And I tell you, in the whole 200 shows that we've done, 200 plus, I've never done that. I've never just sort of become acquainted with an artist and just said, let me track that guy down and have him on the show.
That's very cool.
And it was really, really, really enjoyable.
Chippy kind of goes with tape.
What's that?
Chippy goes with tape.
What does Chippy mean?
Chippy means like tart, harlot.
Oh, yeah, that's why she's got.
Don't you like the fact that the
I love it.
The examples I gave you were actually more antiquated verbiage than chippy. I said tart and harlot, which are actually
even
more.
That's true.
But let's get to the two lovely folks we have
absolutely.
With us.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, what do we do with the children we've failed? That's the question asked by Habitat when Lewis Chance, an activist and advocate for children, buys a house on a quiet suburban street and establishes it as a group home for troubled adolescents. He sparks a firestorm of protest among the street's NIMBYs, not in my backyard. Our next guest, an Emmy Award winner and Golden Globe nominee, portrays Margaret in this acclaimed production being presented by Latino Theater Company at the LA Theater Center. And here to talk about the show as well as her illustrious career, once again, please welcome Susan Clark.
Thank you.
How are you? You're just as beautiful as I remember you.
Oh, how sweet. Well, thank you.
So lovely to have you on.
Yeah, thank you for reading that. That's you know that the playwright, Judith Thompson, dedicated her play to all the children in group homes. Mm-hmm. And she's not a well-known playwright in America, and she's not a well-known playwright in California, but mm-hmm. I think she will be now. She's very tough. She tells it like it is. Right. And some people get uncomfortable, and some people cheer when they call me all these terrible names, which I won't use on the radio. They say,
it's internet radio. You can say whatever you want.
Bitch, get out of here. And they go, yay. Yeah. Because the characters are all afraid of change, and they're in it. They're all afraid of abandonment, and they've been abandoned by parents, by death, by dysfunctional family. And so each character in the play, which is what makes it interesting and not just a rant, is that they go through this amazing arc. Mm-hmm. You start at one place and you end up at another. And there are no easy answers, except that the audience is supposed to think about their responsibility, their culpability in this process mm-hmm. of what do we do in 2013 with millions of children who are not finishing high school, hundreds of thousands of them in homes, abandoned on the streets, whatever, and we can't walk away from it. It's been an amazing journey for me to go downtown every day, Central City, for the last 2 months, park my car, get to know the local people, get to the local restaurants, and I feel like I'm in another country. In a good way.
In a good way, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you see the chippies walking down with the cute little dogs and somebody asleep on the sidewalk.
Right. No.
You know, it's the contrast.
And you feel it. It's like living in a soundtrack. You just feel it all around you. Yeah.
That energy is amazing. And you take it with you into the theater. And the company, I mean, this play would never be done at the Amundsen or at the Mark Taper, mm-hmm. It's a different constituency. Mm-hmm. Jose Luis Valenzuela brings in these ideas. And the play is different than the original because we have a First Nations, we have a Latina, and we have a Vietnamese mm-hmm. actors. These represent the Rainbow Coalition.
Oh, so this is not a premiere, but it's a modified version of the original?
No, it's a premiere probably of L.A.
Okay.
But the play has been done several times in Canada and in the United Kingdom.
I see.
But what makes it special to hear is that we are using the ethnicities that compromise our city and put them in the play.
Mm-hmm. Were you familiar with this playwright before? I mean, how did your relationship with this, did you just go and read for it? Did they ask you to do it? How did it work out
that you found out about it? I found out about it because I go to Canadian Authors and Playwrights Bookstore in Toronto, and they know me, and I buy the plays that haven't been done here. And they're often more hard-nosed and more interesting than what is written today for a couple of reasons. Number one, Canada is a small country and they're not on the firing line. And number two, playwrights and writers can get grants from provincial and national government funds. Right. So,
what a concept.
What a concept. Yeah. And I guess Stratford, Ontario Festival, the festival in Niagara-on-the-Lake would come close to being a national theater. They run for 10 months of the year. Actors there in the theater can actually make a living and bring up a family. What a concept.
Yeah, what are the other ones?
It doesn't happen here. Maybe in New York, but not in L.A. It's too hard in L.A.
Yeah.
How much time have you in the theater has your life been devoted to?
45 years.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, with time out for good behavior and doing... and doing television and film raising a family and all of that. But no, that was my first love. I've been in it for all my life.
Yes.
And I trained in England.
Right.
And then again in Los Angeles.
But you're born Canadian, right?
I am.
Yeah.
I am. Toronto.
And of course, everyone remembers you from that wonderful series that you were on, Webster.
Yes.
Yeah. How long was that show?
Well, it was 4 years on ABC and then another 2 years first run syndication. So mm-hmm. 6 years of shows.
You were always such a classy, as you still are, such a classy lady.
Thank
in,
you.
In your roles. Right?
I guess.
Oh, you were.
Well, it's the high cheekbones and 5'9". I mean, what are you going to do?
You know, Susan, you reminded me of something when you were talking about Canadian artists. I'm a huge, and I'm sure you know him because you're Canadian, but you might know him anyway just because he's a brilliant musician, and to me, one of the great poets of our time is Leonard Cohen.
Oh, amazing.
And I was delighted to see that he took the Juno Award for Artist of the Year away from Justin Bieber.
Oh.
They were both nominated,
yes,
and I said, there is hope. There is hope
exactly.
if Leonard Cohen... But the other
Did you
thing,
see his amazing HBO show that they shot in London?
I didn't... Oh, no. I have the DVD.
Oh.
I didn't see it, but I did see him when he was at the LA Live here.
Yeah.
And what he said, you said something earlier that just reminded me of it, because he was when he left Montreal and came to New York before all of the Chelsea Hotel number 2 and the time with Janis Joplin and all that. I just loved what he said, because everyone holds New York in this esteem, and he got to New York and he said, and I got off the train and I was like, wow, this is almost as good as Montreal, which I just loved, because they just, you know, he just has such an affection, and but
and Montreal know. Is him.
Oh, it's
fantastic
city. Yeah,
it's
just a
very
fantastic.
Sexy city, Montreal.
Really?
Actually.
Well,
I
it's
think
a
so.
French influence.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
all
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
It's very, yeah.
The food.
So, before I forget, I want to make sure we get this information out, not that we're done by any means, but I want to also call out Susan's partners in crime here mm-hmm. with this production. The other actors, Sal Lopez, Esperanza America, Paul, I never had a say Nguyen. Okay, thank you. I never know what to do with that G. Paul Nguyen, Susan Clark, and Nina Silver are the other actors. And this is, of course, Habitat, and it plays Thursday through Saturday at 8 o'clock, Sundays at 3. And this is at, I'm looking for an address on here, Michael, but you have it in your promotional material. Let's throw it out there.
Yeah, it's on stage now, ladies and gentlemen. Right. And wonderful. It is downtown Los Angeles, as Susan said. And
it's Spring and 5th.
That's right, Spring and 5th.
It's an old bank
Los
building.
Angeles.
They're four. Yeah, it's four theaters. The bank building was erected in 1910 or 1912, and when you go from stage left to stage right, you go down this tunnel, which was in fact a tunnel almost the size of this room, the studio that we're in. And when we went on a tour, Jose Luis lifted up this mat and he said, and down there is the LA River. And you can hear it.
Nice. Holy cow.
It's really, it's and there are ghosts, and you know.
As any good theater has.
Yes.
I have it here. It's 514 South Spring Street.
Yes.
And for tickets, you can call 866-811-4111. That's 866-811-4111. And for online ticketing, that's thelatc.org. thelatc.org. And we will throw that information out there again before the end of the hour, but I wanted to make sure that we had that.
Absolutely.
Out there.
Well, what a fascinating concept that he's put together with this. You know, the play, and what you said, I think you're very right when you're saying that this type of a show could only be done in an environment like that. It couldn't really be accepted quite in the same emotional way if you did it at a larger theater like the Marte Performance.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I think that the expectations of that audience are very different.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only that, but you're sort of forced into an intimacy that benefits the play. You know, when you're in those smaller venues, like I saw Doubt in the Amundsen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fantastic play, and it could not have been in a worse venue. Because here's Doubt, which takes place in this woman's office, and it's all about tension and restriction and all this, and you're watching it in this massive room, and you can't see anyone's face. And it's just like, you know, the venue dictates a good part of the evening.
Because
you know?
The audience is another character in the production.
Exactly.
And
mm-hmm.
that's what's so important for actors, you know, that we have an audience who's listening or angry or upset or with us or not, you know,
right.
so that the dialogue, the tacit understanding going back and forth between the stage and the audience is alive. That's what makes it fun.
Right. And how is it for you? Because as you said, I'm getting that you play a fairly disagreeable character.
Yes.
And how much do you dig sort of feeling that,
that energy coming off of the audience. I know that's a
you know
great thing
fun?
For me as a
performer. What's fun is that, yes, they hate me at the beginning, and they're supposed to. And then there's this this epiphany, because what happens with the old Wicked Witch, Margaret, she really gets a relationship with the young actress Esperanza America, the Latina, and she becomes like a grandchild. And she betrays this daughter and the daughter, the granddaughter, and the granddaughter just calls her on the carpet without using any bad language. And the biggest line, and you actually hear people gasp, is, "God is watching you, Margaret." Mm. You know, that's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And wow. And so to be a lonely widow, and you meet somebody, and you start to build a relationship, and there's absolutely no connection because they come from such different worlds, and then you betray that beginning, that almost there.
Yeah, friendship. When you're the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
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 And she is, too. She's very vulnerable. Her
right.
mother has just died.
Oh, wow. Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it
we
got to
get
to.
How long is the run? I want to make sure
till,
we can catch
till
this
the 12th of May.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we still have some
weeks.
Time. Yeah. Okay.
Time.
Good.
Susan, may I ask you of the very interesting films and many of these I have seen that you've done, from Coogan's Bluff to Tell Them Willie Boy Is Here with Robert Redford, Valdez Is Coming with Burt Lancaster, and you've got Gene Hackman that you've worked with in Night Moves, and the disaster film which we all remember, Airport. 1975, Airport, and another
climb,
film.
Baby, climb.
Yes,
it's my one and only impersonation of Charlton Heston.
Climb, baby, climb.
And then the TV movie biopic of Amelia Earhart. She was Amelia Earhart in that as well. But of all
you got an Emmy nomination for that,
yes.
Didn't you?
Yes,
huh?
Yes.
Of all those films that I just mentioned, did you have a particular favorite?
Well, I had a particular favorite of a film you didn't mention,
oh.
And that was Babe, as in
yes,
Babe Dietrichson.
Of course.
And I fell in
yes.
love with the actor and married him, and we were together for 37 years. So
wow.
I would say that would
wonderful
be the
Alex
top
Karras.
Of my hit parade. Yeah.
Yes, the wonderful
yeah.
They
Alex
were all
Karras.
Very interesting. Burt Lancaster, I guess, was the most bizarre. And we did two movies in Spain, one in Spain and one in South Carolina. And one of my memories of Burt is sitting with a Spanish crew, an English sound crew, and an Italian lighting crew, you can imagine, and the heads of department from the U.S., there was a lot of dialogue in many languages. So we had time to sit and hang. And we sat on the top of a mountain, and out of the blue, he turned to me and he said, "Don't let the bastards grind you down."
Wow.
And I kind of said, "Yeah, right." He said, "Do you know what I'm talking about?" And I said, "You're talking about Hollywood?" He said, "Yeah."
Yeah.
So he was the producer, and he was the star, and he really was the most fascinating, complicated, irritating, brilliant person. He didn't like his room at this little hotel in Almería. So he punched holes in the wall and had the hotel make him a larger suite.
Oh, my.
We had a bunch of hippies join in one of the scenes in the Guardia Civil. This was many years ago when Franco was still the dictator. And the Guardia Civil came and arrested them all for pot. Bert said, "We're calling it a day." "We're calling it a day?"
Calling
and
it a
he
day.
Went down with cash and bailed out these 30 young people who had 12 hours to leave the country.
Wow.
So he was an amazing character.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You
I've
don't
never
hear
heard.
It. No.
Yeah,
and
just
he was
and
a
not
big,
what you would expect.
Big guy, big political guy for the ACLU.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that I know. No.
He used to have a gym where he did his circus tricks. That's why he, that's how he stayed in shape.
Yeah, that's right. He came from circus
he
folk,
did.
Didn't he?
He did.
Yeah. I tell you, one of my favorite movies of all time, and I'm not even a baseball fan. Field of Dreams.
Yes.
And
his
performance in that was just absolutely
spectacular.
Stunning. Yeah. But it's nice to hear that he was such an off center guy.
One more person I want to ask you about, because she had to be amazing to work with, was Shelley Winters.
Oh, yes. She was amazing.
Speaking of off-center.
Speaking of off-center, we did the film in Montreal, one of your favorite places, and mine. And Shelley Winters was dubbed by the French as Madame Hiver, Madame Winter, because when she didn't like the lighting and everybody would go to lunch, she would rearrange the lighting.
Oh,
and
my.
And it sent the cinematographer bizarre. I mean, she was a character. She had many handlers. That was the producer's, associate producer's job to get a handler, and she fired
Winter's Wrangler. Calling the Winter's Wrangler.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Someone told me a story about Shelley Winters that she was asked to audition for something. Uh-huh. And she was so offended at the fact that she had to audition that she went to the audition and she had, like, you know, just sweats on and a gym bag. And she sat down and she opened the gym bag and she took an Oscar out and she put it on the table. And then she sat for a couple more seconds and she took a second Oscar out and she put it on the table. And then she just said, "Some people think I can act."
Wow. Yeah, there you go.
I don't know if it's true or
really?
Not, but it's a great story.
That is.
Let me throw this out there again. Sure. The show is Habitat. Susan Clark is with us talking about it. And it is for reservations. Call 866-811-4111. That's 866-811-4111. Or go online to thelatc.org. And this is at the Los Angeles Theater Center is actually presenting it in their 320-seat Theater 3. And that's 514 South Spring Street in Los Angeles. I'm sorry. I'm so drunk.
The old
I've been drinking since 10, Sylvia Michael.
Sydney.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sylvia Cindy, yes. But please stick around. Please stick around and join
absolutely.
Us. Stay with us for the rest of the hour and chime in. And we'll chat with our next guest who's been sitting here so patiently.
Yes,
on television, our next guest was featured on The Drew Carey Show, Fame, and the Disney TV movie Cinderella, Geppetto, and Annie, and could also be heard on the new NBC musical drama Smash, a very successful show. Aside from performing, he's an internationally published songwriter and has had numerous songs recorded and released overseas by some of the biggest names in international music. He has had the pleasure of working with such A-listers as Whitney Houston, Brandy, Usher, Reba McEntire, Vanessa Williams, and Chaka Khan, to name but a few. And you can see him live, that's right, live, this Sunday, April 28th, in Broadway to Billboard at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. Please welcome the one, the only, Matt Zarley.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that intro is so funny.
What's that?
I forgot all that stuff. I was like, who wrote that? It's funny.
Well, I'm just reading the card you're holding up, Matt.
I'm sure I sent it to you, so I don't. I'm like, wow, okay.
No, we just track down everything off this thing.
You just Google me?
The interweb.
Yeah.
Yes, we go on the interweb, the worldwide net, and we find this information. How are you?
I'm great.
You look great. We're so excited to have you at Sterling's. This is a supper club that I produce, Susan, just so you have some reference to it, and it's kind of the number one club in town for presenting the best of performers that do Broadway and pop and Great American Songbook. So we're speaking of a banquet you, I think, referenced earlier, where was the theater that you're playing in was a bank, right?
A bank, yeah.
Yes. Well, the Federal was a bank. 1926, built as a bank, and it's the oldest standing single building in the San Fernando Valley. Mm-hmm. So we're on the second floor, and it's all contemporized, but they have kept the dignity of the original design of the Federal. But Matt will actually be performing on our stage, which was the bank vault.
How fabulous.
So
it's really a beautiful space.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a lot of banks that have been converted in this town. Do you know that? Like downtown, there's several.
Yes. Banks
there's like
and churches.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Really?
So you'll smell the money when you start working on Sunday.
No.
Awesome. Love it.
Well, Matt, is this a performance you have done before? Is it newly created? Is it modified?
You know, I've done a very close version of this last fall.
Okay.
It's mainly a night of my music, stuff that I've written, with the exception of I open up with a medley, a 7-minute medley of all the shows I did in New York.
Oh, wow.
So it's a way to sort of appease my theater supporters want to hear some musical theater, and I'm sort of not in the musical theater world as much these days.
It's like a little career overture.
Exactly. It's like a big, like 6.5-minute retrospective of all the stuff I've done in New York. So it's kind of fun, and the rest of the show is really just songs that I've written and have had I've had some Billboard hits over the past couple of years. And
now, I always ask people this when they do these sort of shows. Is there? I'm always curious. Do you pick the songs first and string them, like the creation of the evening? Is there a narrative? I mean, do you pick the songs first? Do you think about what you're going to say thematically and then pick? How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, I've done shows in the past where I've had more of a narrative through line. With this, it's not as much of a narrative, although I share sort of how that song was created and what's behind it and that sort of thing. I like to keep it a little bit more loose. I have a rough idea outline of what I'm going to say, but I don't script it as much.
Okay.
I did a show a couple years ago, which was called Dedication, which was each song was dedicated to a different person in my life that influenced me. And it was also about how I started the business at 12 years old and how I was dedicated to it because I loved it. It was out of love.
Yeah.
And so it had sort of a double meaning in the evening. But that was more of a narrative through line, whereas this is much more of a concert, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With my band and... Right.
How many people you have up there with you?
There's five of us.
Oh wow! Wow! Yeah. That's a good size for that stage. Is a good size.
Oh yeah.
We're gonna be jamming together up there. But they're great. They're really, really a great group.
And you've worked with them before.
Yeah.
Oh okay.
Yeah.
Before I forget, I want to go. Even though I know we've probably never ever mentioned this address on the show before, I am gonna throw it out there just in case. This is Matt Zarley in Broadway to Billboard at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal, 5303 Lancashire Boulevard in NoHo. It's Sunday, April 28th. It's this Sunday. And there's a 5:30 to 6 o'clock dinner seating and then a 7 o'clock performance. Couple of very important things here. Reservations are required. Don't just show up because you won't get in. You want to call ahead and make that reservation. 818-754-8700. That's a number, 818-754-8700. And we'll throw this out there again as well as the information about Habitat. Just want to make sure we get out there.
Yeah, people in LA don't like to make reservations.
They don't.
Why is that?
I don't know, because I sent out an invite and I have like a ton of, I mean, maybe 100 RSVPs, and like, I'm like, you guys have to make reservations, you know, because you're not going to be able to
you
get it.
You actually have to, to use the phone that you
they
are
don't do. They just show
hand.
Up. Yeah. It's not New York where everyone sort of, you know, makes a formal plan and does their thing. Right. Here, people just kind of, you know.
But don't you think it's all about the traffic? Don't you think it's all about the traffic? You know,
I think most of the time, absolutely. And that's why we did it on a Sunday early evening, because that way everyone can get to the Valley.
Well, and the other thing, too, and this is one of the great things about the location, is if you're looking at the El Portal Theater, right to the right of it is where the Federal is.
Oh,
and so right across the street is the train stop.
The Metro.
The Metros. Yeah. And Monica and I do that all the time when we come in, because we're in Tarzana. And, you know, I don't want to say it, but Monica drinks a little. So we don't. I'm kidding. She's listening today,
Miss Monica.
I knew she'd get a kick out of that. But we don't. That way, we just take the train and go right there. And it's one of those places in LA where you can utilize mass transit, and there are not a lot of them. So
is that underground or is that above ground?
It's above ground until that point, and then it switches. Because then when you get to Universal, then it goes underground to downtown. You've never ridden?
I have not.
No, you haven't? No.
It's a very curious system, too, because it's an honor system, which I find
very odd. I know.
You don't ever give your ticket to anybody. I'm like, you could easily walk on and just...
Right. We were just in Italy, and it was the same thing. We were in Italy, and you buy your ticket, and you don't have to show your ticket, but if they ask you for your ticket and you don't have it, then it's a $300
fine. And is there
someone
walking the cars?
So it's like fine insurance.
I've never seen anybody walking the cars, and I've taken it a few times. Like, when I go to Staples, because I live over very close to the Federal... And I'll just park my car and take it down to Staples. It's like 20 minutes, $1.50. It's
instead of the
$20.
Well,
you know, I haven't either.
And
actually,
it lets you up right there at Staples, right there in front of it.
And
it's
I actually live in one of the cars. So and I still haven't.
And they still ask me for it.
You know me.
Love it.
What's the price of a ticket to go downtown?
$1.25.
And that'll take you downtown and any stop
with the connections. Yeah,
Disney
yeah.
Hall, all of it.
Yeah.
Right there.
Get off at Pershing Square for the LATC.
Oh, I'm going to come see that.
Yeah.
Oh, there's another. Oh, okay. So Pershing Square is your stop. We're actually talking train stops in Los Angeles.
Isn't
can you believe
amazing?
This?
Well, that's kind of important for people, as Matt said, and as Susan brought up, traffic is a consideration. And that's why we do present shows on Sundays.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Making it easy.
I'm telling you, I have a theater company called Seaglass Theater, and what's the hardest night to get people out is Friday night, because they're just done with driving.
Yeah.
And you've been driving all week.
week and then your weekends, you don't want to get in a car. No, I don't want to, so yep. I can't really blame them. Matt, the question that Michael asked Susan earlier, I wanted to ask you. Of your shows and the past ones you've done, is there one that sticks out? Is it maybe Chorus Line because it was the first one? Or
like favorite experience?
Yeah, favorite experience.
Without
is
a
most
doubt,
memorable?
It was Tommy.
Tommy, really?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think because the cast was unbelievably exceptional in New York. It was like, in the ensemble was Alice Ripley and Norm Lewis and Michael McElroy and Sherry Renee Scott. I mean, like, all the people that became Tony winners, you know, a decade later, they're all, like, the leading people in
musical theater. And it was groundbreaking, too.
And it was groundbreaking, yeah. And, you know, I was the pinball lad. I sang Pinball Wizard. And then I was the Tommy understudy. And my first show on as Tommy, Pete Townsend was there.
Oh.
So it's like, you know, how can you...
Wow.
I don't know how you can compete
that.
With that experience.
I know.
And the overall experience, just Des, the director, and just everybody down the line was just had so much integrity and cared so much about it till it closed. I mean, and the cast was just like, I've never worked with a group of people like that.
Wow. Were you in it from beginning to the end?
No, I was one of the first replacements. Mm-hmm. I went in 10 months after it opened, something
I
like
see.
That.
How long did it run?
Almost 2 years.
Wow.
Not long enough. I mean, it should have run for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was weird. It's sort of, they didn't know what to do with it, I think, marketing-wise, which they didn't take advantage of MTV and these sort of outlets at the time. And then Rent came along a few years later and completely changed the whole marketing, right. You know, game. Mm-hmm. And I think now everyone sort of emulated what that show did in terms of, like, mass marketing to, like, a pop culture audience. And they just didn't take advantage of it, unfortunately, so it didn't last as long.
We've both worked with Who members, because the first movie I ever did was called Cold Justice, and I had this one scene with Roger Daltrey.
Ah.
I was a gay man in a prison, and I put the moves on Roger Daltrey, tried to go out. My screen credit is Gay Man in Jail. Very first one. You can IMDb
it.
That. It's actually
that's
there.
Funny.
And they made him walk on boxes because he's a smaller fellow, and they didn't want our height differential to be so much, so they had
wow.
him up on little that's Alan funny. Ladd boxes they had him on. But a very, very nice man. Very nice
yeah,
man.
He's
but
really nice
Pete
man.
Is... Me. I mean, did you meet Pete Townsend
oh,
afterwards?
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, he's like... That's like meeting, you know...
It was... Yeah. He's so soft-spoken and yeah. such a nice... He's a gentleman.
Yeah.
It's not at all what I expected. I expected, like, this, you know, rock star. And he
yeah.
doesn't come off like a rock star. He's very sweet and articulate. And yeah, it was a very surreal sort of period of my life. It was great.
There's a great shot of him attending the premiere of the film, Tommy, in London. And because of what he looks like and just regular sort of nondescript kind of, he doesn't look like a
like dresses
a rock
really
star,
well,
yeah.
and he's just very...
And it's just about him giving his ticket at the thing because the cops had stopped him because he looked like he was just sort of wandering
oh,
around,
right.
so they made him give his ticket to see the premiere of the film that he wrote and scored and everything.
I love it.
It's a great
and
one.
Then your association yeah. with the Chorus Line, was that from... for a long period of time?
I did Chorus Line for a year and a half. That was my mm-hmm. first show on mm-hmm. Broadway. Mm-hmm. I did the last year and a half of the run, of the original
mm-hmm.
run at the Schubert Theater.
Yes.
I was 19, and that was surreal, too. I still remember, like, turning around away from the mirror, the opening number, and like, oh, my God, I'm in the Schubert Theater. And it was sold out, and I was like, God, this is like history yeah. in this theater.
Well, it was history.
And to be so young and, you know, yeah. had that experience.
What role did you play, or did you?
I was Mark.
Yes.
Yeah. Which was great. It was an incredible experience. Yeah. I mean, I was very fortunate. I had like a really nice run in New York. New York was really good to me overall, I think. Mm-hmm. Because it's a tough place to exist, you know, to live.
Yeah.
You're always in survival mode, no matter how well you're doing there, I think.
Yeah.
And I was lucky that I had people that sort of nurtured me and really sort of mm-hmm. looked after me without ever feeling like I was being looked after. I felt mm-hmm. very independent, but I was taken care of there, so it was good.
Nice.
That's very important.
Good. I feel very lucky.
It's very important in that town because I tell
yeah.
you, it's a tough place.
It's well, very yeah. different now too. I don't know because I've moved. I went back there for a short period, you know, about 10 years ago, for like a year and a half, and it was totally different business. The theater world is very different than it was when I first
went
like there.
Was it like what you see on Smash? Now.
Probably always has been.
No.
That's another show.
Yeah. That's
just,
yeah.
I'll throw you a line on this one. We only have 5 minutes left, and I do want to. We do want to baptize them with the
yes,
thing that we do at the
yes.
end of the show. But I also yeah. want to tell people right now that we have to leave ourselves about a minute at the end,
to
Michael.
Play,
because
a little
we
track
have a track from
yes.
Matt Sarley called "Change Begins with Me."
It's a beautiful song.
And we're going to have you play us off the air with that. So
right.
We're going to get that. But before we get there,
yes.
we always like to ask our guests about the... actually, before we do that, let me throw this information out there one more time so we're sure to get it in. It's Matt Zarley performing in Broadway to Billboard. This is at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. And that is this Sunday with a 5:30 to 6 dinner seating and a 7 p.m. performance. Tickets, 818-754-8700. That's 818-754-8700.
And Susan Clark in Habitat, which is on stage now at the Los Angeles Theater Center. And it is a wonderful play that is directed by Jose Luis Valenzuela and produced by Latino Theater Company at the Los Angeles Theater Center. It's a beautiful 320-seat theater. Nice. At 514 South Spring Street, downtown Los Angeles. And it runs through May 12th. And you simply call for tickets, 866-811-4111, or visit the online ticketing at latc.org. LATC.org.
Okay, Susan, we'll start with you. The worst little performance disaster you can share with us, something that maybe didn't go like it should have during performance?
Well, my first production of Hamlet,
we're jumping off the edge of the pool here.
I had arrived to possibly play Ophelia, and Hamlet was 5'2", and I'm 5'9", and as we walked to the center of the stage, the director looked at me, closed his eyes, and shook his head. But he didn't fire me. He actually made a part of a sort of maid or attendant for Gertrude, the mother. But the costume didn't quite fit, and it was a 4-foot train. Now, I was used to using trains, but I had to walk up about 14 steps to deliver this speech about poor Ophelia. I stepped on my train, and I walked on my train, and I arrived at the top step on my knees, and the entire audience was hysterical. Because the back of the dress, the costume opened, it was, you know, classic. And I had to gather it up and crawl on my hands and knees off. And the poor woman, it was the beginning of her big scene, and she never forgave me.
It's like Dorf does Shakespeare. Absolutely. You know that Tim comment?
That's so funny.
Dorf does Shakespeare. Matt, what do you have for us?
I have two little quick little moments. It's the same show. One of them was mine doing, the other was not, but it was kind of funny. I was doing Cats at the time. And I was downstage. I was downstage for a lot of it. I was sort of one of the more featured dancers in the show. And my tail fell off. Right when I'm downstage.
We have just stories of trains and tails.
Because the way it was like just tied, you know, around. And the knot came undone and it fell off. And I got up, we're like on the floor, and I got up and it was on the ground, and everyone in the front row was like, oh my god. It's kind of funny.
And a man without his tail.
Yeah, you know, right, not good. And then
is that a tail on the stage, or you're just glad to see me?
And another funny thing in this same show is our dance captain was at the back of the house one day taking notes, and I kid you not, tripped on a cord, like one plug. It came out of the socket, the entire lighting and sound went out on the show.
Oh my god.
No lighting, no sound.
What? One cord. One cord. Yeah.
That to me was my most fondest memory of that show.
OSHA would have something to say about
really,
that.
Really? Something wrong with that?
Like, what is it?
That's
yeah, this multi-million-dollar set and
exactly.
It's one plugged plug into an extension cord. Like, it was.
Get the batteries! Yeah. Get the batteries! well, a pleasure to have both of you on, and we're going to.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
And many thanks to Alex McMurray, who called in for the beginning of the show. And please go to his website, alexmcmurray.com. Brilliant musician. And speaking of brilliant musicians, we're going to have Matt play us off the air. This is a track called Change Begins With Me. Matt, is there a website that people can go to for you?
Yeah, you can go to mattzarley.com, mattzarley.com.
mattzarley.com.
And this is a beautiful song.
And
so listen
this
up,
is
folks.
Him with Change Begins With Me.
Hey. To fall so fast, I'd give everything I had, they'd take it.
give them my heart and they would break it. But that was then, and now I'm standing tall. It's all beneath me. This strength somehow freed me. It's like I've turned a new page, and finally I can see it now. It's all so clear. All my answers were always here. I was so blind, but now I see that if I want my life to change, the change.
Listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.